in this particular program. And also, I'd like to thank you for inviting me to take part in this distinguished panel. When we think of Muslims, and we think of the sort of fear and anxiety that Muslims are experiencing right now, I don't believe anyone really could really relate to it, including myself, even though I'm a Muslim. And the reason I say that is because Muslim has a particular connotation in the Western world today. A Muslim means someone who's an outsider, someone who's from over there, someone who's from the Middle East, or from Asia in general, an Arab, to the extent that anyone who is perceived of by members of the mainstream culture as being an Arab, then that person may be attacked in some way, shape, or form. It's like we saw yesterday in Kansas. Being an African American, living in America, and coming from a somewhat cynical culture with relationship to American justice and claims of fairness, I find myself not completely able to feel exactly what I know my brothers and sisters feel. And, you know, because I don't want to try to claim that I, you know, can fully understand, especially when we take into consideration the many people who have come here to this part of the world seeking a better life. There are about four different reasons that I would say that many Muslims are anxious. First and foremost, it is what has been termed the Muslim ban, as we know. The ban of so many different types of people, refugees among them from seven Muslim-majority countries. And when we look at those countries, one thing that we can observe is that each one of those countries is a particular country that our own government has sent its military there to kill and bomb people, you know, be it Somalia, Sudan, Libya, Syria, Iraq, in Yemen, Saudi Arabia is waging a war against the local community, a group of people in that particular country as well, supported by our own government. In Iran, we want to bomb. Those are things that we find common to those particular countries. And actually, there is no evidence to prove the suspicion or the claim, we would say, that terrorism or any member of those countries have been guilty of acts of terrorism. So this is one issue that we hope doesn't turn into an actual legal ban, a permanent ban, because I come from, I worked in a number of different fields of specialization. You know, I also worked as a security guard for part of my life and worked in the prison system as well. And what I come to know at times is that oftentimes certain laws get passed through based upon claims of security concerns, that oftentimes you don't even have to give an explanation to the public about what those concerns are. When it comes to even the Constitution, and you know, as Congressman talked about the importance of us upholding the teachings of the Constitution, that we have to not fall for the trick the idea that this is something that just started under Trump. We ourselves are responsible, have been responsible for allowing our Constitution to be ripped into shreds. The Patriot Act has been in law for a very long time. And even under our previous president, it was reinstituted or reaffirmed as well. But the Muslim ban is one thing, one concern. Deportation is a definite concern for many people. Internment, as we are speaking about today, is a definite concern. And I would say a last concern, which even perhaps is not very obvious to a lot of Muslims, is the concern with Muslims nationally being labeled as terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. And that's based upon the bills which have been passed around by certain lawmakers to try to label what we call the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. Now, of course, I'm not here to defend the Muslim Brotherhood, but I think we do have to understand that the Muslim Brotherhood has many different iterations, and there are many different aspects to the Muslim Brotherhood, which make it difficult for them to be labeled as a terrorist organization, especially being it's very difficult to find evidence of terroristic activity. But what's important about these bills and labeling the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization is that once or if it happens, because so many of our national organizations like CARE, ISNA, ICNA, MAS, the Muslim Students Association, a number of these different national organizations have some roots, or their founders have a connection to the Muslim Brotherhood in some way, shape, or form, that this itself would totally destabilize the Muslim population in America as well. So this is another concern that we do have. But when it comes to the Muslim ban, what we do need to understand as well is that 2017 is not the first time that a Muslim ban has been declared. When Spain was the superpower during the transatlantic slave trade period, and in the 1500s in particular, in 1522, in the island which was known as Hispaniola, that we know today as Haiti and Dominican Republic, there was the first slave revolt that happened. And this slave revolt was led by Muslims. And as a result of that slave revolt, the Spanish had decided that there would be no Muslims allowed into the Americas. There was a ban. A similar policy had been developed once the British had taken over control or achieved domination as well in the Americas over the Spanish. And in Jamestown, where these slaves were scrutinized to the extent that that they had to be baptized coming into Jamestown. You know, that if there was people were suspicious that a slave had Muslim roots or Jewish roots, you know, that they were not allowed to actually come into the Americas. So there have been bans in the past. And as the congressman also highlighted, that you know we have a tradition in our country. There is of exclusion, you know, the Chinese Exclusion Act, among other things, have marked our country in very negative ways. And I do think that that these things are symptoms of a much more systemic problem. Which perhaps even result from they're sort of the unintended consequences of stipulating that citizenship should be determined by the color of your skin, or in that particular period, rather, you know, being a member from the Western part of Europe, in particular from England. And in certain ways, it was understandable that the English colonists, they chose, rather than religion, they chose race as becoming an important and determining factor in citizenship. And they just recently fought over a century of warfare, bloodshed, you know, between the Catholic and Protestant churches. And, you know, so people, Europeans coming to the Americas, they had lost a lot of faith in religion and what it could do for people. So they had to decide on some particular criteria for citizenship. You know, they just happened to say, okay, let it be that a person is a free white person, among other conditions, right? But this particular issue is something which continues to resurface throughout American history, where policies are supported or passed, and legislation is passed to support rules that privilege the white majority in this particular country. And so we find this consistently throughout American history, where people get barred from coming to America, or the percentage of people allowed to enter into America at different times in our history is repeated over and over and over, out of fear that non-whites will achieve a majority status and then overthrow the influence of the white. Samuel Huntington is said to be the most influential political scientist of the 20th century. This is a man who taught at Harvard University for half a century, who was part of the certain administrations, government administrations, certain presidential cabinets. He was highly influential in American politics. In 1993, he wrote a book called The Class of Civilizations. And in that particular book, he posited that that after the fall of the Soviet Union, that wars in the future would not be fought between civilizations anymore, or large countries. Rather, they would be fought between cultures. So he predicted that there would be eventually a clash between the Chinese and the Americans, or there'd be a clash between Islam or Muslim countries and the Americans. So that was his prediction that this would occur. Following that, in 2004, he wrote another book called Who Are We? And in that book, he wants you to define what a real American was. And so, in short, what he said was that real Americans are Anglo-Protestants. And when we reflect upon the current administration, we'll see that they themselves have adopted a similar philosophy of Huntington, right? And that particular philosophy, it definitely has a major impact on the rise of what we call nativism, which also was predicted by Samuel Huntington, right? So mentioning this is simply to highlight that we as individuals, that there's a lot for us that we also have responsibility. One of the very facts that the Japanese internment was possible was the very fact that they were able to be racialized or to be placed in a particular situation in this country that made them vulnerable, that they were racialized and so they could be easily identified, but we could put them all aside because they don't belong here, they're not one of us. The hope is that with Muslims, that this won't be possible because of the very fact that there's much more racial diversity among Muslims. However, and I will end with this, and I don't want to go on for too long, but when we reflect upon the image of Muslims, and I started with this idea of what a Muslim is and how people perceive Muslims, that we have to not allow ourselves to be influenced by the imagery of the alien Muslim or the Islam, which is invading America, it is something that doesn't belong here, that it is something foreign to America. It's not part of our civilization because we are Anglo-Protestants, according to Huntington. And the imagery, when we look at both the conservative and the liberal media, we see that this image is reinforced. That in the same way that other groups have been stereotyped historically, how blacks have been stereotyped, how Latinos have been stereotyped. And everybody has a stigma around themselves. And Muslims have been stereotyped as this invading malignant force that's coming to America to pollute the purity of America. Right? Because if anything's gone wrong with America, it can't be because of something that we've done, something that we're doing here. It has to be something that's coming from outside of America, right? So we have to fight this, you know. So in America, there's a lot of diversity. Imagine the way things would be, how you would see Muslims had the majority of times you've seen on television that the people being interviewed were white American Muslims or black American Muslims, right? Do you think that it would be easy for people to go along with policies like the Muslim ban, among other things, you see? You know, but this is part of the problem as well, is that we allow ourselves to be too easily manipulated, that we lay down for things too easily, right? And so we have to stop allowing ourselves to be manipulated in such fashion. But at any rate, not to prolong belaboring a particular point, I did wanted to highlight that America has a tradition of discrimination. It is nothing new. But that is not nothing new. Doesn't mean that it can't change, and we have to work for change. And we can't put the system is only as good as the people who are in charge of the system. We have to ensure that people are educated about their history, and people are educated about how the different media around us can manipulate us and help and discriminate against one another. So hopefully, I haven't. Too far. I'm sorry about that.
No, you're great. Thank you, Dr. Elliott.